1 Corinthians chapter 11, let's try this again. We didn't get very far last week. In fact, I think actually we claimed more verses than we adequately and actually got through. The truth is, we were normally on schedule to do communion the first Sunday of the month. And I ask everyone to hold that off because I thought we'd do the first 16 verses last week so that this week we could get into the section of 1 Corinthians 11 where we were talking about communion and therefore, you know, this whole service could be about communion. But then we got like 4.5 verses last week and that messed everything up. And I was afraid if I asked Tammy to hold off those communion songs another week, that she might resign. So here we are. We should get to our section for communion next week, though we will observe communion this morning. But let's recap a little bit just to situate ourselves back in the passage itself. In verse 4, the Apostle Paul spoke to the church at Corinth and told them that any man who prays or prophesies with his head covered, that is wearing some kind of head covering, a yarmulke or something of the sort, that in fact he dishonors Christ, his head. And he said that like we should all know that. The problem is we don't all know that. That does not initially make sense to us. All we've ever known from Judaism, as we study Judaism, is that the men always wore yarmulkes in public, especially for public worship settings. So that's what we would expect. We would expect it to be appropriate for men in the now Christian era to continue on wearing head coverings in church. But as it turns out, there's been some kind of transition between Judaism, the life and ministry, death and resurrection and ascension of Jesus, the institution of the New Testament church. And now here's Paul telling us, no, that's actually now for Christian churches a really bad thing, at least for Corinth, for a man to pray or prophesy and have his head covered, basically for a man to be in a Christian church service with something on his head covering his head. And we learned in verse 5 that in the city of Corinth, it was not just Christian women that were wearing head coverings in that culture, that as a matter of fact, every married woman in the city of Corinth wore a head covering. The only women that did not wear head coverings were either the younger ladies who were not married or the pagan temple prostitutes there in the city of Corinth. So women without head coverings were making a statement in Corinth at that time that they were available to men in some way, either for marriage purposes or for paid sex. So this was a pretty bold cultural statement, one that Paul wanted the church at Corinth to take very seriously. Head coverings were as important to them as wedding rings are to us in our culture today. And so that's why Paul is so passionate about this with them. It's why Paul's words here scare so many modern day Christians when they read this and think, oh, he sounds serious. As a woman, a married woman, I think I need to wear a head covering in church. Well, there's a reason for all of this. But all that Paul is doing is taking biblical principles and truths and then attaching them to traditions and customs in Corinth at this time. And I think that's really what confuses people so much as they read through this. They get confused that Paul does that. He's taking Bible truth, infallible, inerrant truth, and then he's applying it to traditions, and I think sometimes we have a difficult time separating out when Paul's speaking truth and when he's speaking about tradition, when he's speaking about commandments or when he's speaking about customs. We have to be able to do that. And if we can do that, then we're going to be able to do the same thing for our culture, for our present day situation. We'll be able to take these same truths, these same commandments, we'll be able to situate them with how things are done in our modern day culture and be able in that sense to communicate the right things to the folks around us in our culture. Well, then Paul began talking about church headship. He kind of took this from family order, to church order. And he directly told us that Christian women can pray and prophesy in public. That just means that women can speak to God and from God in a church setting. And here's where we have to be a little bit careful, because no matter where you look, Old Testament to New Testament, you're going to read very clearly that there were just certain things in public worship settings that women were not permitted to do. That's Old Testament. That's New Testament. You can read the Law of Moses on this. You'll find that there could not be a woman Levite or a woman priest. You can read that for yourself. This is the Law of Moses. A priest had to come from Aaron's genes, and a Levite had to come from Levi's genes. You know I was going there. But it had to be sons. These were sons from Aaron to be the priests for Levites. Sons from Levi. Either way, it had to be men. It couldn't be women in tabernacle worship leading that at all. And then we come to the New Testament, and Paul summarizes it like this in 1 Timothy chapter 2, that in church, women cannot teach or exercise authority over the men. Now, in Paul's letter to Titus, he did clarify that the older women were to teach the younger women. And we read in other places that it's totally appropriate for the women to be instructing the children. So we kind of put together everything we know. It's appropriate for women to teach other women in the church. It's appropriate for women to teach children in the church. Now we add this to that. It's appropriate for women to pray publicly in church settings, even when there's men present. It's appropriate for women also to prophesy. And what does prophesy mean? You guys, I don't want to exhaust you over this. You guys in this fellowship know what that means very well. I think outside of this church, a lot of times when Christians hear the word prophecy or prophesy, they think it means foretelling the future. It doesn't always mean foretelling the future. It can mean that, but it just means forthtelling from God. So that's why I said praying and prophesying, that means speaking to God and speaking from God. Prophesying just means you're speaking on behalf of God. Women are allowed to do that in the public church setting so long as they don't violate what else we have written in the scriptures. For example, a woman, she can prophesy in church. I mean, that's basically what Mary Magdalene did when Jesus tasked her with announcing the resurrection. She went and she told the male disciples about the resurrection. She was prophesying to them. She was speaking to them on behalf of Jesus. That's what Tammy does up here on a regular basis. As she leads songs, she's speaking on behalf of God. All of that is completely appropriate with the Word of God. But if a woman is going to speak in a way in a public church setting that violates what Paul taught in other places, like, you know, 1 Timothy chapter 2, the book of Titus, and exerts authority in some way over the men in that local church, or instructs from the Word, teaches over the men in that local church, now we find that according to the Word of God, Old Testament to New Testament, that situation is out of divine order. It's not supposed to work that way. So in the Old Testament, women could not be priests and Levitical workers. In the New Testament, women can't be in those leadership positions over men, whether that's administratively or doctrinally. So women in the New Testament era should not be pastors, preachers, teachers, or elders that are exercising authority over men. They can be all of those things if it's just over the women, but not if there are men involved, because now you are breaching, you are violating the divine order that God has set up for the family and for the church. And, you know, we studied this last week, mostly in relation to family order, but it is in fact the same when it comes to church order, that we may have women in our congregation that know the Word better than the men do. And like they have the qualities to be in leadership more so than our men do. And we get in those situations where we're like, okay, well, do we let the guy do it? When there's like 20 women in our, I'm speaking hypothetically here, when there's like 20 women in our church that could do it much better. And the answer is yes, we do that. We stick with the man because in the process of choosing what we think might not be the best situation for our church, we are honoring God by honoring the divine order, and he's going to honor us for that, and he's going to bless us for that. And that's why, that explains how I'm up here. We got 20 women in this church, not speaking hypothetically, that could probably preach, teach, and pastor better than me, but we're going by the divine order. That's what God has called for, and we know that God honors that. He's going to take that man that's lesser in our minds than the women. He's going to bless that man. He's going to speak to that man. He's going to use that man to correct, to encourage the whole fellowship. That's how God views this. We be obedient to do our part. He will show up. He'll do the miracle stuff and make it good and right for everyone that's involved. As far as women in ministry, I'm going to leave it at that. You know, this is a very complex topic, and there are generally a lot of arguments against plain statements like that. So if you would like more information on that, women's position in ministry roles, you can go to our website, anchoredfellowship.com. And we did a study back on May 1st of 2024 called Women's Role in Ministry. So you can go to anchorfellowship.com, click on Message Archive, click on Browse by Topics, and that title will be right in there. You can just click on that title. It'll take you right to that message. You can listen to that message where we exhaustively deal with this, where we take all of the arguments against what the Bible teaches, and we set all of those arguments straight with the Bible itself, so that if you go listen to that teaching and you still disagree with us on this topic, I'll just tell you right now, you are letting American culture subvert and pervert the Word of God. Because American culture's got our thinking so out of whack on this. We're so confused about this. The Bible isn't confused about this. The Bible is very clear about this, so I'll just leave it at that. But let's finish up this intro with the questions that emerge from the tiny little section that we did study so far in 1 Corinthians 11. First of all, must Christian men, and this would be all men and all women from all time, must Christian men refrain from wearing a head covering in church? Is it a sin for a man to wear a hat in church, Jerry? And the answer is no. It's not necessary. It's not a must. So then the next question would be, okay, well, should men, pardon me, should men refrain from wearing a head covering in church when they pray and when they prophesy? And the answer to that is that completely depends on the culture. Paul's culture there at Corinth, yes, the men should abstain from wearing a head covering. Our culture today, I don't think it really matters. There may be some folks in our church that don't like it. I don't know. Personally, there's nothing outside of the church in the culture that would say it's inappropriate or sinful or shameful. So I think modern day we don't really have a problem with that. Personally, I don't care. You men, you can be sitting back there in your hats. Josh, wear your cowboy hat. That's fine with me. Love it. I'd have no problem with it. I told you this is in me from my upbringing, like some after effects of something cultural, to where I could never get up here and preach, teach, pray publicly, anything like that in a ball cap. I would just feel weird, even weirder in a cowboy hat, because I look even weirder in a cowboy hat. But that's just me. Now, as far as women goes, must women wear a head covering in church when they are praying or prophesying? Must they? And the answer to that would be no. Again, the next question would be, should a woman then wear a head covering in church? And the answer to that has to be exactly the same. It depends on the culture. For the culture in Corinth, yes. You know the reasons. We're going to get into a little bit more today. But yes, the women in Corinth, because of their culture, they should definitely have worn their head coverings in church settings and even just in public in general. But how about the person in 2025? And the answer is no, because No one looks at a woman with long hair in public and automatically assumes that she's a hooker. That's what they did in Corinth. If you were a woman wearing long hair out in public, you were like, whoa, she's available. She's either wanting to get married or she's wanting to hook up in a more inappropriate way. We don't assume that these days. We see women with long hair that is not covered in public, and that is not any kind of sexual statement to us. I'll just add this, ladies, if you do feel like the Lord is speaking to you from this passage and you want to wear a head covering, some form of symbol on your head in honor of your husband as your covering authority and just reflecting what Paul's speaking about here with the divine order, then you are welcome to do that. But it is my personal advice. I would personally advise you against that because, again, what's this all about? It's about taking truths and principles that are from God and then applying them to culture. And what does our culture say about women in head coverings? Here's what our culture says. If a woman's wearing a head covering these days, it's probably because she is Amish or apostolic or Orthodox Jew or Muslim. So for a woman, a Christian woman, just a regular, you know, accurate to the word woman today, to wear a head covering, you have to understand you may get mistaken out there in trying to make the right statement to the public. You actually may be making a wrong statement of the names that I just gave you. At best, you're going to be assumed to be a legalistic, cult-like Christian. And at worst, you're going to be assumed to be a worshiper of Allah. So that's why I would advise you against it in our modern day. It's just watching culture and making the statements that we want to make to culture. Ladies, if you're looking for a way to announce that you're married to the public, what do? Wear a wedding ring. Or wear a shirt that says, I'm with stupid. Something like that, right? I don't know why that just came to me. Must have been the Holy Spirit. Thank you, Lord. What do you want to do if you want to communicate to the public that you're a Christian? Well, what cultural tools do you have available to you? You can get a bumper sticker that's a Christian bumper sticker. You can wear Christian jewelry if you do such a thing. You can wear Christian t-shirts. Those are great ways to communicate your Christianity to the public. We have a lot of tools culturally at our disposal to do that. And this was the problem with Corinth. They didn't have t-shirt printers. You know, they didn't have people that would print the big fish, the ichthus, the symbol of early Christianity, on t-shirts. They didn't have bumper stickers for obvious reasons. They didn't have bumpers. They didn't have cars. They didn't wear Christian jewelry. So if they had all those things, that would have solved their issue. This whole head covering thing would be a non-issue. But they didn't have those things. You do. And you can make use of that. You can make very clearly any kind of statement you want to make in public. So we don't need to be getting all confused about their cultural way of doing it and actually messing up our statements to culture by following exactly as they did. So then, as I've stated, one of the major points of application from this section of verses is that we do have to pay very close attention to cultural practices. We have to learn what statements those practices are making, and then we have to figure out how to make the appropriate statements within that culture that we want to make. We have to basically bob and weave as the culture changes. God's word never changes, but culture is constantly changing. So as Christians, we have to find a way to hold fast to the one while we leverage and manage the other for the right purposes. So let's begin reading. Let's get started in verse 6. For if a wife will not cover her head, then she should cut her hair short. But since it is disgraceful for a wife to cut off her hair or shave her head, let her cover her head. Okay? If women with uncovered hair in the city of Corinth were assumed to be unmarried or prostitutes, then Christian married women had only two options as Paul saw it. One, you either wear your head covering, or number two, you just cut your hair completely off. But as Paul's going to tell us here shortly, a woman cutting her hair in this culture, that was also thought of very poorly by the folks in the city of Corinth. So he's going to like basically make this statement, but then step back from it and make only the recommendation that basically, look, Christian women, understand the culture around you. Just wear your head covering. Stop being stubborn. Stop harming your reputation, your husband's reputation, and the church's reputation. You either cut your hair or you wear a head covering. Cutting your hair, it's not much better in the culture. It's not a much better statement in Corinth. So here's Paul's advice. Ladies of Corinth, married ladies, just wear your head coverings. Verse 7. For a man ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God. So back to the deduction that we've made about head covering. At this time and in this place, head covering seemed to symbolize being under the authority of another human being. Paul never makes that statement plainly, but by deduction, that's exactly what he's saying in this section. That if you were wearing a head covering, man or woman, you were saying, I'm under the headship, I'm under the covering authority of another human being. And that would be a statement that Christian men would not want to make in the city of Corinth, especially in their church services. They would not want to make the statement that they are under the authority of another man. They would want to make the statement that there is no man over the church, but that Jesus himself is the head of the church. And so for that purpose, Paul says it's actually disrespectful for a man to wear a head covering. And for the biblical principle on this, Paul goes back to the Genesis creation account. That's what he actually did in verse 7. But he's going to come right out and say it a little more clearly in verse 8. So let's just read all of that first, and then we'll make some sense of it. Reading on, a man is the image and glory of God, but woman is the glory of man. Verse 8. For man was not made from, underline that word, man was not made from woman, but woman from, underline from again, but woman from man. Verse 9, neither was man created for, underline that word as well, for woman, but woman for man. So underline from on both occasions in verse 8, underline for in both occasions on verse 9. So this is why Paul had head covering set up the way that he did in Corinth. He was taking Corinth's cultural practices and he was applying biblical principles to it. He already gave us the divine order for all of this head covering stuff. That was in verse 3. And now all that Paul's doing here is he's pointing out that the divine order follows exactly the chronological order of the creation account. He uses this same argument in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 12 and 13. He says, I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet, for Adam was formed first, then Eve. That's his argument in both occasions. That the man, Adam, was God's first human creation. God took from the dust of the earth, he formed from the dust of the earth the man, and then breathed into the nostrils of the man the breath of life, and the man became a living soul. And because man was made directly from God and ground, from God and dirt, an odd combination, I know, but because he was direct and first creation from God, man becomes the glory of God, so to speak. Now, the woman was created differently than the man. The woman, Eve, and you can read this in Genesis chapter 2, she was not created from the dust. We do not read about God breathing into her nostrils the breath of life and Eve becoming a living soul. She was created from or out of Adam. And you know how this, you know, reads in the Old Testament. The book of Genesis chapter 2, God took and opened up the side of the man, and from the side of the man, the rib or the chunk of the man, God took from the man, and from that chunk of whatever it was, God made from that the woman. It's kind of like using sourdough starter to start your next batch of sourdough. You're not making it from scratch. You don't have to make the sourdough starter. You already got that. You just take that chunk of sourdough starter and then you make your next loaf of sourdough bread. Well, all that's to say this. You can look at the man and you can say, man came directly from God, first creation. But when you look at the woman, you have to say, the woman came directly from the man, second creation. That's true. God created her as well. God formed her. You know, pretty much everything that we could say about Adam, we could say about Eve as well, except for the whole dust thing. But it's just that she was made directly from the man in the chronological order of things. And that makes her, in this sense, the glory of the man. Now, when looking at the Genesis account, in order to support that divine order that Paul gave us in verse 3, there's another important factor, not just chronological order. We read about that, and that was the word from in verse 8. Now we're going to talk about the next part of the divine order that kind of gives this to us, and that would be the purpose for the creation of each sex there in the Garden of Eden, Genesis chapter 2. And that is the word for that we see two times in verse 9. So from, that gives us chronological order. For, that gives us purpose for creation. What was the man created for? What was his purpose? And I guess that's a tough question to really fully answer. I would just put it like this for time's sake this morning. The man was created for God, and he was created to rule over the earth. That's what the word dominion means. The man was to take dominion over the earth. And what was the woman created for? What was the woman's purpose in creation? She was created for the man. She was created to be a helper that was suitable to the man. Verse 10, don't throw stuff yet. If you got your tomatoes, hang on to them just yet. Verse 10, that is why a wife, because of this divine order, because of the chronological order of creation, because of the purpose for creation, that is why a wife ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. Okay, so ignore the because of the angels part for just a moment, but there it is. Very plainly, this head covering culturally meant that this woman was not on her own, that she was under the earthly covering, the covering authority of another human being, her husband. In the church, it meant that women, you know, when they wore those head coverings in church, we're acknowledging the male leadership in the church who were under the headship directly of Jesus the Christ. Now, look at the word angels. Because of the angels. It's a little added section that Paul threw on the end of it just to confuse us real good. The word for angels is just the word for messengers, whether you're looking in the Old Testament or the New Testament. That's why in the book of Revelation, we read the word angels, but we know that that is speaking of pastors. That's defined for us because angels just means messengers. So this very well could be referring to human messengers. So it could mean that women in church should wear their head coverings in the city of Corinth for the sake of the ministers, the messengers of the word, for the sake of the pastors and the Bible teachers. And you can see where that would matter, right? You know, imagine being set to teach the Bible on a given Sunday there in the church at Corinth. And you get up front and you look at the congregation and none of the women have head coverings on. That could really switch things up with your plans for your message. You might say, what, you know, are all these women prostitutes? Maybe I just throw this chapter by chapter, verse by verse thing out the window and just preach a gospel message, see if they all get saved. No one's got a head covering on. So that would kind of be confusing for the earthly messengers there in the church at Corinth. But probably when we read the word angels here, it is speaking about angels in the proper sense, and that would be angelic beings. And you say, well, why would church order, why would statements of custom, why would that matter to angelic beings? And I would just say it like this. The angels take order very, very seriously, because you have to remember their history. 2/3 of the holy angels watched as 1/3 of the holy angels stepped out of divine order and followed after the deception of Lucifer and then fell from their original order. So to me, you know, when I think about this, I'm like, I bet it gives the holy angels flashbacks when a woman tries to wear the pants in the family. I bet it gives them flashbacks when a woman tries to take authority over a local church. I bet it's like angelic PTSD for them. Like, oh no, here we go again. Why won't anyone just stay in their proper order? Why won't everyone just figure out what role God has put them in and then just stay put? On the other side of the spirit realm, the fallen angels, I fully believe you have the fallen angels egging on those kinds of rebellions against the divine order, whispering into the ears of the women, your husband really is stupid. I think it's time you just kind of take the lead here. And he's not going to give you any flack. He doesn't want to lead anyway. Just go for it. Lead the family. Or, you know, in the church, the men, this is boring. These men are leading it. They don't know half as much as we do. There's no life in it. There's no excitement in it. They're monotone. It's all about order. It's all about doing things properly. Maybe it's time you step up and you fix things. And in first century AD Corinth, when a woman wore a head covering, that was telling the holy angels and the fallen angels that they were willfully submitted to proper authority, to proper headship. And it was telling them that there was an authority, a protector over them. So it was telling the holy angels, we're not going to make the same mistake. We're following the divine order. And it would be telling the fallen angels, like, you know, back off. Hey, whatever you're thinking here, you take it up with my man. That's my covering authority. You go through him if you want to get to me. So those are the kind of statements you would make as a woman wearing a head covering in the city of Corinth, at the church in Corinth. That's the kind of statement you would make to the angelic realm. Verse 11. Nevertheless, in the Lord, so that would mean basically in the divine order, in the spiritual order, that's family order, that's church order, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man, nor man of woman. This is very important. This is the balance that we need, because we can't like read the stuff that Paul was saying already and then take that too far in one direction. We need this kind of balance. Verse 11, to say that more simply would be to say it like this. We need each other. We need each other. It was the whole point of the male and female creation in the Garden of Eden, wasn't it? It was the point that we needed each other. Adam was created first, but he needed an Eve. Without an Eve in the Bible, it'd be a very short story and there'd be no one to read it after Adam died. There needed to be an Eve. Men need women, women need men. So ladies, this should not be offensive to you in any way. Woman was created because the man on his own just wasn't cutting it. It's literally the first time in all of God's creation process where he stopped and acknowledged that something wasn't good. Everything else he went through, he created it, you know, trees, plant life, animals, fish in the sea. Good, 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 good. But when Adam gets his review, it's like 1 out of 5 stars. It probably would have been 0 out of 5 stars, but you know how all those reviews are. You have to give at least 1 star. That's frustrating. 1 out of 5 stars. He comes to Adam. He reviews Adam's situation, and he says, "Ooh, boy, it is not good. It's not good at all for the man to be alone." So women were created to complete the man, to fix what was not good about him. That's why it's always a lady's last words right before they get married to say, "I can fix him. I know about that problem. I know about that issue. He's a fixer-upper, but I'm the lady for the job. I can fix him." That's literally what the woman did for Adam in creation. And thank God that he did create women. Because if God had not created women, we men would just be sitting at the traffic lights all around town, no one moving, because our wives wouldn't be there to tell us that the light's green. You know, we need women. No, I'm totally kidding about that one. And thank you, Maggie, for never doing that to me. I appreciate that. We need each other. Not just for procreation, obviously for procreation, but men need women, women need men, men need women to be women, women need men to be men. The woman is to be everything that the man is not. The man is to be everything that the woman is not. So don't expect to marry someone and have like the exact same viewpoints on everything, the exact same likes and dislikes. You're going to be different. Expect that. Know that, because that's the way God intended for this all to work. To be complete and balanced, a man needs to find his woman and then join himself to her, unless, of course, the Lord has gifted you for the single and celibate lifestyle. Anyone want to go back into all that again? Me either. In the church setting, it works no differently. We need each other as well. If it were all men in the church, I think it would be, as I alluded to, kind of boring and lifeless, but man, would everything be done in order. And all the light bulbs would be changed, you know. All about business, all about maintenance. Let's get through it. Let's get it done. Here's the schedule. Boom. But if the church were only women, I think, wow, would it be exciting. Man, emotional, spiritual. But also, it might get a little weird. It tends to do that in an all-women kind of setting like that. So we need both the men and the women in the church to balance it out. And that's just because of how differently we think, you know. Men, one-track minded. Women, we can't put a number on those tracks. Many, many tracks. Best way I heard it explained was like, for the man, there's one box in the middle of his head. And whatever he takes and puts in that box, that's what he's thinking about. And only that. There can't be anything else in that box unless he intentionally takes it out and puts the next thing in. And then with the woman, it's spaghetti brain. It's all connected to her, but it's just winding and it's in and out. You know, it's funny at times. My wife will say something really random. And I'd be like, "Where did that come from?" And it's hilarious when she tries to walk me through her thinking process. I love it, because she'll be like, "Well, you had mentioned dinner. And, well, it made me think back to when we were having dinner with the Steinbrechers. That got me to thinking about the diet he's on. That got me to thinking about how he lost that weight and then gave you those clothes that he no longer fits. That got me to thinking about shopping." And 10 minutes later, she finally comes back to the random point that she made. And we laugh. Because even she knows it's funny. Like, really funny. We're so different. But we need that different. In Christ, as far as salvation is concerned, we don't even look at male, female. There's neither male nor female. We're equal at the cross in terms of salvation. But outside of that, we are extremely different. And both sides are needed for balance in a marriage and in the church. Verse 12. For as woman was made from man, so man is now born of woman, and all things are from God. So here's more balance from us. Let's take the last statement first. Obviously, none of this flies without God. God started all of this. And again, God the Father sits at the top of the divine order. We don't argue that. But then Paul speaks a little bit more about our interdependence, male and female interdependence, that without women, men couldn't even be born. That's always their argument, right? Well, without us. Well, hello, it works both ways. No woman can be born without a man. Don't let the culture confuse you on this. Men can't have babies. And women can't have babies without men. So, it works both ways. For procreation's sake, we need each other. Verse 13. Judge for yourselves, is it proper for a wife to pray to God with her head uncovered? And for us, we'd say, yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter to us. We don't care at all whether a woman is wearing a head covering or not. But understand that for the city of Corinth, the church at Corinth, when Paul asked this question, he expected them to say, oh no, that is way out of order. That is not appropriate at all for a woman to come to church and pray publicly or prophesy publicly and not have her head covering on. That is a scandalous thing. Verse 14. Does not nature itself teach you that if a man wears long hair, it is a disgrace for him? This should be lots of fun. Is it wrong for Christian men to have long hair? Well, I think first of all, what we need to find out is what Paul means when he uses the word nature. Nature is translated from the Greek word phusis. And if you look up what phusis means, it actually means growth by germination, and it doesn't just mean nature generally. It's not speaking about natural universal laws on the planet. It's actually speaking about kinds. So growth by germination in the category of kinds. If you go back to Genesis, this is exactly what this word is meaning. Back in the book of Genesis, God created everything according to its kind. Do you remember that? We're tempted to say species there, but it's a little different because of the way we look at species these days. But God created everything after their own kind. He created animals after their own specific individual kinds. He created the human being after its own kind. That's the word. And that's the meaning of the word phusis here. We're talking about growth by germination. Obviously, Paul is speaking about the human species. So when you see the word nature, I think it'd be good for you to stick the word human right before it. He's talking about human nature or humankind, mankind, right? That's what Paul's speaking of here. So he's not just saying, you know, you can look around at the planet and the planet itself is going to tell you that it's a shame for a man to have long hair. That's not what he's saying here at all. All he's saying is that when we look around at humankind, humankind is telling us that if a man wears long hair, it's a disgrace for him. So, Paul is not trying to establish some universal rule here about hair length. Believe me, he's not. When Paul says nature here, kind, the context would define that nature to be human nature. So he's essentially saying, doesn't human nature all around us declare that a man with long hair disgraces himself? So once again, this falls into the category of culture, societal norms. This was all about their human experiences, their societal norms, the way that they saw things properly and improperly. That dictated all of that. In this culture, proper, honorable men wore their hair short, and only dishonorable men wore their hair long. This is true from both the Jewish culture at the time and the Greek-Roman culture at the time. It was the same for all of that. They looked at it like this. a proper man, an honorable man, would have short hair. And if a man had long hair, that meant that he was effeminate. It probably meant that he was a homosexual and maybe even a homosexual prostitute. Because yes, those existed in the city of Corinth as well. And guess how they wore their hair? Long. Okay, so Paul's speaking again within his culture. He's not speaking about any kind of biblical rules on hair length. In their culture, they could say, yes, human nature teaches us that men who wear their hair long are effeminate, probably homosexual. And it's not the same in our culture. It's not the same. We don't have any kind of length expectations for hair in our culture. All of this has changed for us. Besides, here's a good question. What is long hair? It's a very subjective thing, isn't it? Does a man have long hair if it's past his shoulders? Or does it need to be about midway down his back? Is that what constitutes long hair? Or does it have to be that it's got to be long enough that he can tuck it into the back of his pants? You know, who gets to sit as judge and decide, oh, yep, sir, your hair's too long. You're going to need to get a haircut next week. It's a very subjective thing. And I'm sure my dad would have something to say about this. I won't let him take the stage, though, out of fear for what he might say. But when I was younger, and we joke around about this quite a lot still. When I was younger, between probably the ages of 12 and 16, I really wanted long hair. I begged him for long hair. And he just would flat out tell me no. And I could tell it made him mad every time I asked. And I tried every argument I could think of. And he was just dogmatic on it. No, you're not going to have long hair. So you know what I did? I obeyed. End of story. Good story. Okay, that's not what I did, though. What I did was I would let my hair grow as long as I possibly could and tried to keep my dad from seeing how long it was. Every day he'd come home from work, we'd sit at the dinner table together and have dinner. And I would take my hair and I would go like this and I would tuck it in the back of my shirt. And I would sit like this at the dinner table. So I was afraid if I moved like that, a little hair would pop out and he'd see it. Did it work? Nah, never worked. He would always catch it and say, Arlen, haircut tomorrow. Of course, that meant work for mom. She'd have to take me and get a haircut. Well, what really got my goat is when I finally saw a picture of my dad when he was dating my mom. He had long hair. He was a hippie. He was a 70s hippie. Not just a hippie, he was a hypocrite because he wouldn't let me have long hair. And then insult to injury, absolute negative irony. By the time I was old enough, 22 years old, moved out of the house and could grow my hair long, I was balding already. Neither my dad nor nature would allow me to have long hair. But I'm over it, as you can tell. Doing really well. Now, another way that human nature weighs in on this argument is just in the simple fact that through growth by germination, which is the word that Paul uses here, phusis, by growth through germination, it's just a fact that women have a natural advantage to growing long hair over men. Unless you're like Absalom from the Bible, the normal woman is... her hair is generally thicker and will grow longer than a man's. And a man's hair is generally thinner, weaker, and doesn't grow as long even if you want it to. And that is because testosterone drives men's hair growth and estrogen drives women's hair growth. And unfortunately, testosterone is terrible against DHT. That's the thing that causes your hair to thin, weaken, and ultimately do this. But estrogen is very effective against DHT, and that's why usually women don't thin or lose their hair as badly as they age as men does. In general, human nature just does that. It gives women long, beautiful hair, and it gives men thinner, short hair, and it doesn't always stick around for too long. So that's just where we're at. I would like to add before we kind of close on this very odd point of speaking about hair and go right into communion, that this verse does not say that a man in the Corinthian culture would commit a moral failure if they wore their hair long. It's not saying that. It's not calling it a sin. It's just simply a loss of honor in the culture. In other words, if you're a man and you have long hair in Corinth and you're a Christian, when you're walking in public, everyone is going to assume that you are effeminate. Everyone's going to assume that you're a homosexual. And if you let people think that because you're stubborn and you won't get a haircut, then what that's going to do is shame you. It's going to bring disgrace and dishonor to you because they're going to be thinking about things that are incorrect and inappropriate about you. Now, our culture, no such thing. There shouldn't be any feeling of obligation one way or another here. If you're a woman with short hair, we don't care. If you're a man with long hair, we don't care. Unless you're Mark, get a haircut. But everyone else, you're fine. We just don't care. So we really just need to be paying attention to the culture that we're in, making sure we're making the right statements. But with that said, at times, we can't always let the culture dictate where everything's going, can we? There are times where the culture wants to take and start to do something that is absolutely contrary to the divine order. And in our case, contrary to what God has established about gender and gender distinction. And that's where we'll leave it for this week. We'll pick right back up there next week. We'll talk about God established gender. It's real simple. That's what I love about the Bible. Real simple. Male, female. And what God has to say about gender distinction. In other words, you should be able to walk in public and not have someone tap you on the back and say, excuse me, ma'am, and you turn around, oh, you're a guy. Ooh. That should not happen. There should be gender distinction. That's biblical. We're going to talk about all of that next week. Bring your gender-confused friends. They will love it.